Broadcasting from Lockport, New York, it's time for The Dads Must Be Crazy. Just three guys raising kids and currently hiding from them in an undisclosed tool shed to talk about parenting, pop culture, and penguins. Or something else that starts with a P. It's Craig, the stay-at-home dad historian and hockey enthusiast. Howie, the stay-at-home dad who used to be a reporter when journalism was a thing. And Bobby, the retired Army vet, Trekkie, and gamer, helping to raise three kids in beautiful Western New York. Now, here's the dads.
Welcome to the Dads Must Be Crazy. I am Craig, joined today by only Howie.
Yes, it is. It is only me.
Because Bobby has decided that he can't make it today. Something else came up, and, you know, it's part of being a dad, I guess.
Something came up. That's a good way of putting it.
Right.
And that's all I'll say.
Right. We will get on his case during the week, so don't you worry.
But we're not going to get on his case here.
Right.
Because this is the Dads, and this is a very safe for work show.
It is a very safe for work show. Look, before we get into what we want to talk about today, I want to thank Bob Confer last week for sitting in with us and promoting it on his Twitter page this week.
Absolutely. I mean, Bob, anytime you want to come back, we'll be more than happy to have you. We still got to set up a time to tour the factory and go to a Brockport hockey game. Are they hosting a playoff game at some point soon? I think they clinched the playoff spot.
They did. I think it's Wednesday night, though.
Oh, no, I can't make that. No. We bowl.
Right.
If there's a game on the weekend, I don't know. We'll have to get a hockey game at some point.
We'll probably have to hit the season in the fall.
Or we just decide, hey, let's all four of us get tickets to a Sabres game.
And then the other thing, I'm a history guy, and I know you make fun of me for bringing that up, but you bring up, as much as I brought up that I love history and I'm a historian, you bring up that you used to be a journalist, so.
I bring up a lot of things that don't pertain to what we're talking about, right. So that's besides
the point. So the history thing is, he lives in Gasport. Gasport is known, got its name because there were gas pockets that bubbled up in the canal while they were digging the canal and stuff. He has some of those gas pockets on his farm, and he said, okay, we should come out and check them out.
That would be cool.
So when it gets to be not frozen, he said, we can come out. When it's frozen, it's too hard to get back there. So we'll have to get some boots and stuff and check out the gas that's bubbling up in his backyard, basically.
That's cool. And then from there, we could go towards Teapot Hollow and have a drink.
Right.
Yeah. And only the people locally probably know what I'm talking about.
Well, it's just that corner, man.
It doesn't really matter.
Right.
So
I think at one point they called it Freeman's Corners, too, but I'm not positive.
I don't know.
I have to look it up.
The names that float around in Western New York for places just... Yeah, ask somebody down in Carolina to pronounce Skajakwita and see what they say.
Sacagawea. Sometimes Skustawa... Yeah, I can't even.
I'm a living example of the fact that unless you were brought up with it, chances are you have no idea how to pronounce half these things. When my family and I first moved to Olean in 93, we're driving around, and my mom was like yelling at my dad, like, I can't believe you took us away from civilization. We're in the middle of nowhere, because we were living in Virginia Beach, you know, several hundred thousand people, however many people live in Virginia Beach. It was a lot of people. You have Virginia, Norfolk, Hampton Roads. Olean's got, at that time, a city of 20,000 people.
Same size as Lockport.
Yeah, more or less.
With a cooler call letters for the radio station, though. WPIG.
I actually DJed there at one point on Sunday mornings. But at one point, we're driving from Olean to Jamestown because my mom's like, we need to go to Walmart or where one of the bigger box stores that Olean at that time did not have. So we're driving. And as we're driving, I'm like, what is that? Chattacua? And I didn't know how to pronounce Chautauqua. I called it Chattacua. I was 13. I didn't know any better. I know much better now. So, yeah, people from not in the area who don't know how to pronounce half these things will not know how to pronounce it until you've pronounced it for them.
I worked for a company out of Pennsylvania, and I was the local guy here, and we had an emergency call on Wherley Drive.
Wherley, right?
Wherley. I can't even pronounce exactly how they were saying it. I was like, are you sure you got the right office? Because we had a bunch of offices around and stuff. And they're like, yeah, it's in Williamsville. And I go, oh, you mean Wherley. But it took me quite a while. Like, when they told me, I'm like, I think you got the wrong place. And I hung up on them.
But
and then he paged me back.
At least they were trying to pronounce the letters in front of them. I've had telemarketers call up and ask for my wife and ask for Chelsea. Now, you know my wife's name is Celeste.
Right.
I don't know how you get Chelsea from Celeste. And I remember hanging up two times in a row. And they finally called me back. And a third time, and they pronounced it right. I go, yes, you pronounced it right. But no, she's not home. And I hung up again. I was I was in a mood at that point. I don't know. But speaking of wives, I think we should jump into this topic this way. We're going to backdoor into this topic. Following the Twitter account of David Ayer's wife last night.
Sarah, right?
Sarah. I think it was Sarah. I really don't recall what her name is. And I apologize. Someone's going to be like, oh, my God, you know, his wife has a name. And I know she does. I'm sorry. I don't have the Twitter feed in front of me. And up until last night, I'm pretty sure 99.9% of the hockey population didn't know this guy existed.
She has 10,000 followers now. I looked this morning.
It went sky. It was basically her following last night on Twitter was akin to UMBC beating Virginia a couple years ago in the NCAA basketball tournament. And some of you listening are probably wondering, who is this Ayers lady? Who is this David Ayers guy? I want to say her name is Sarah, yes?
Sarah Ayers, yep.
Yeah. So last night, as some of you may recall, if you've been avid listeners to Niagara's Water Cooler for the last couple of years, Craig and I used to do hockey games.
We love hockey.
We do. So last night, one of the cool things about hockey that exists but is rarely seen happened. Two goalies on the same team went down with injuries. That's not cool. But the cool part about it is the emergency backup had to come in.
And here's where I didn't realize this. I thought it was some,
I know where you're going, and I didn't know that either. Yeah.
I thought that each team had somebody that they could use as an emergency backup. I didn't realize that the home team has to have one on standby all the time. And I watched the interview last night. It was like a 10-minute interview with him after the game. And they asked him, so he did every home game last season and half the home games so far this season. And the year before, he did a bunch of games also. So the Leafs call him in. Before the game starts, he puts his lower stuff on. So he puts his pants and shell on. He puts his guards on and his skates on. And it's just wearing street clothes above for his shirt and stuff.
And his t-shirt was a Toronto Maple Leafs t-shirt. Which is awesome. It just adds another layer to the story.
Well, when they did the interview, he had a Carolina Hurricanes because he was officially, for one day, a Carolina Hurricane. Yes. Yeah, he signs a one-day tryout contract. So he sits in the media center and waits for word that he could be brought in. So he's sat there for 100 games maybe between all of last year and half of this year and a couple of years ago. So we're talking about 100 games. He sat in the media room waiting to see whether he's going to get in. So he's watching it on his phone because apparently there are no TVs, ironically, in the media center.
That, yeah, okay.
Seems odd.
Yeah, okay.
They're Canadian, so we'll excuse that.
What's that about?
Yeah. Okay. So all of a sudden his phone, he's watching it on his phone, the CBC on his phone, and the CBC feed stops because he's getting text. You need to start getting ready. He's like, yeah, this is a joke. All of a sudden he gets more text. You better start getting ready. You better start warming up here. You better start getting ready. And all of a sudden, the guy from the Leafs comes in and says, they're going to need you. You need to get out there. And I'm not sure what the delay was between the second goaltender getting hurt and him coming out because they have to make a jersey for him.
Yeah.
And put his name on it. I'm guessing they have 90 must be reserved for their emergency backup. Just had to throw a name on it.
Well, I'm sure any team's got a reserve jersey. It may not necessarily be 90. But I see your point. Continue.
But that might be the Hurricanes number.
Right, right.
So they throw a name on it. He comes out. He's wearing a Marlies goalie mask.
Because he worked for them, not the Leafs, right. Which is just funny.
And he's got the Leafs pants on with a Carolina Hurricanes jersey over top of it. And he comes skating on the ice. And credit to both the Leafs players and the Hurricanes players, when he came out, the Hurricane players were like tapping him like, all right, we got this, you know. Poor Ron Francis is sitting on the bench. He's going, oh, you can just see we're getting screwed here.
Wait.
Was it Ron Francis?
No, it was Rod Brindamore.
Rod Brindamore. I'm sorry.
Francis, I think, is their GM.
It could be. Yeah. So Brindamore's on the bench. When he comes out, he just rolls his eyes like, we're done.
Right.
And he lets the first two shots in.
And everybody in Toronto's thinking, this is good. We're going to win.
Because they're fighting for a playoff spot. Those two teams are fighting for a playoff spot.
With each other.
Yes. Yeah. So between the second period and the third period, they take him until he goes in the locker room with everybody, and they have a new shell waiting for him because you can't wear those Toronto pants out there when you're playing for us. So they throw the red shell on, and he goes back out, shuts him out in the third period.
Yes. Which was just...
Though there was an Austin Matthews shot that... He stopped it, but it was loose in the crease, and I can't remember which defenseman from the Hurricanes stopped it from going over the line. So he didn't actually make that save. The defenseman did, but
it didn't go in the net. That's all that matters.
Right. He made the initial stop.
It's like, you know, Patrick Waugh used to say, you know, somebody interviewed him when ESPN had hockey, and it was a great commercial with Waugh, and they said, Patrick Waugh of the Montreal Canadiens, we believe that it's been said that you talk to your goalpost during games. Is that true? He goes, no, that's not true. And then he looks down at the net and looks at the goalpost and says, what? No, you can't say that on TV. So it was like, the goalie is not going to care how the puck doesn't go in the net so long as it doesn't go in the net.
Right. What I thought was cool is I watched a lot of the, I found a stream that had played it and I watched a little bit of it. When he made saves, both teams were like, hey, good job, which was really cool to see.
And I know both teams are fighting for the same playoff spot at this point in time. But kudos to the Toronto fans, who I'm sure after the game were livid. But when they left the arena, were livid. Immediately after the game, when he was named one of the three stars of the game.
The first star of the game.
And he was given a standing ovation in Toronto. That, to me, shows pure class in the moment. I'm sure after the moment, they went on Twitter and eviscerated everybody who was affiliated with the Maple Leafs.
Not him, though.
No. He's a legend in Carolina right now. They were selling his jersey out of the Carolina Fanatic store before the game was even over. Everybody in Carolina is like, you come down, you don't got to buy a beer, you don't got to do this, you don't got to do that. He was a legend. And watching Sarah's Twitter feed just light up, she goes, oh my God, I can't believe this. My husband's getting to live his dream. I thought his 15 minutes were up, but now he's going to have a lot more. She also, at the end of the game, when he was named for a star, had a very not safe for work two-word tweet that led to a lot of other comments that she was just like, hey, I'm having fun here. Leave me alone. I'm excited for my husband. And that basically is what we want to talk about today. This is a guy living out what I believe to be his childhood dream. He hasn't played a professional game in 5 years.
The last game he played was in a senior league, and he let in 11 goals in a 14-5 loss.
Right. He did at one time play junior hockey. Right. He might have played some semi-pro whatever.
I think I heard him say that he helps coach the Bantams in Toronto also.
So he's still with the game. He loves the game. He's a part of the game, and he's made the game part of his life. And like anybody who at one point was an athlete, or in my case, pretended to be an athlete, you know, these are things that we, in some way, shape, or form, try to hold on to. And this guy last night gets to live out his dream. And at the end of the night, you know, that's all anybody
He's
can
like,
ask.
I get paid too?
Yeah, exactly. You know, this is exactly what we're talking about. He's getting $500 for the night, right?
And he'll never have to buy dinner whenever the Hurricanes are back in town.
Oh, exactly. They'll be, hey, Dave, hey, the team wants to take you out. You know, order 5 steaks. Don't worry, but we'll be good. You know, we'll take care of you. But it's the living embodiment of, oh, these guys make too much money. I'd play for nothing. He's making $500 to play essentially 1.5 periods of hockey. That's playing for nothing.
Minutes.
Yeah. So, and that's what we're talking about, the dreams. I mean,
he gives us, those of us who have played sports like that, not very well, but just well enough to continue playing, the hope that maybe someday we'll get that page and that phone call and we'll have to go down and fill in for somebody. Like I said last night, I could be a speed bump for anybody.
It's like, hey, you know, WWF's in town. I'll be the tackling dummy, you know, just give me a little bit of...
I don't know if you remember this, the 1-2-3 kid.
The 1-2-3.
There was a wrestler in the WWF in those days called the 1-2-3 Kid, and basically he was just a guy at the beginning who went out there and lost all the time. All of a sudden he had this following, sort of like when you voted for somebody for the NHL that didn't really deserve to be in the All-Star game.
Like John Scott?
Right.
Which was awesome because he wound up scoring a goal and got named MVP. The players are like, this is a joke, but we're going to be in on it as well.
Right. So I think that's what happened. There's this guy in the WWE, who was just beat up on all the time, and he kind of had this cult following to the point where they made him a featured wrestler. So, you know, those are the dreams, man.
But we're talking, we're going to broaden this now. I mean, we're talking a guy's sports dream happening. I mean, this is actually to a much lesser extent what the movie The Rookie was with Dennis Quaid when he wound up being the pitcher, Jim Morris, for the Rays. All right. But it's not just sports where things like this happen.
Right.
And that's what I think, you know, you and I were discussing this earlier today. Like, what are we going to talk about today? What are we going to talk about? I'm like, relating this to the bigger picture. Like, when I was a kid, I thought to myself, I'm going to be a doctor or I'm going to be a lawyer. Then I realized how much work went into those. And I go, I'm going to be something else.
Did you really want to be a doctor or a lawyer when you were a kid?
Well, when you're a kid and you realize, well, I can't buy that because I don't have money. What are the two professions that pay the most money? Doctor or lawyer? And I looked at it that way. Then I realized, you know what? Well, then a couple things happened. One, I grew up and understood the
economics.
The economics of it all, the stereotypes of it all, and the work that went into all of it. Then I also took high school biology and chemistry and realized there's no way I'm ever going to be anything medicinal because I'm struggling here and I'm in high school.
Oh, I loved biology. I had because of bonus questions and stuff they allowed, I had over 100 average throughout the entire year.
I was like that with American history, but not with science.
So was I.
I would imagine you would be like that with American history as well. But, you know, the dreams become, okay, I'm going to do this or I'm going to do that. So dreams evolve. You know, the dreams we have when we're 5 or 6 may not be the same dream we have, may not be the same dreams we have when we graduate high school and graduate college. And like dreams, priorities shift too. So that's one thing throughout this entire conversation I think we're about to have, I want to stress. Like, I at one point wanted to be all these different things, and then when I got to high school and I realized, hey, you know, I'm having fun writing about sports and doing the public address for my high school's basketball teams. You know what, maybe I can do something with this. And for a couple years, I got paid to do, hey, you know, now in your starting lineup, now entering the game, now, you know, that basket scored by so-and-so, that, you know, not nearly as bland as I just said it, but, you know, I put some emotion behind it, and it was fun.
The green team shot the puck?
Yeah, the green team shoots, green team scores. Green team, and a red team shoots, green team saves. You know, yeah. So you parlay it into something. And for a couple years there, I'm like, all right, I'm going to go on TV, or I'm going to broadcast this, or I'm going to do this. And anybody who's listened to this podcast more than once understands that I talk too freaking much to maintain certain things. So I wound up writing more than broadcasting, which is a good thing, because the one thing I was taught that has resonated with me for years, first class, freshman year, if you open up the front page of any newspaper, and when I say open up, I mean like unfold the newspaper, the newscast that you watch at 11 p.m., all of the words in that newscast fill anywhere from 1/2 to 2/3 of the front page. And that's it. That's all you're getting. So by going into newspaper and journalism, I was able to get all the details out, tell a fuller story. And I really, really enjoyed doing that. And up until the paper closed a couple years ago, there was one main issue that I was reporting on nonstop, and our good friend Scott, he was getting ticked off at the amount of times I was reporting on the same issue, but at the same time, somebody else locally was like, you're doing a great job with this. And people got upset at what I was reporting on. They're like, oh, you're biased, you're this, you're that. I'm like, you know what? You can say it all you want. I guarantee you, and I will stand by this because there's no way to prove otherwise, so try proving the negative. I guarantee you, had the paper not closed, I would have won an award for continuing coverage of that issue. Now, I can't prove that I would have or wouldn't have, but I know in my heart that I was doing right by everything I was taught. So that was one of the things, like, my dream would have been like, hey, I'm doing this, and people the dream, I think, in some respects for everybody is to be recognized for what you're doing in some way, shape, or form. So it has shifted now. I mean, at one point, I'm like, I'm going to be on TV. Then, of course, you know, I met the person who would later become my wife, and I'm like, okay, well, maybe I'm going to do it this way. And I modified what my goals were and my dreams were, so I'm like, it's always an evolving type of thing. So now it's like I'm trying to write something that is fictional. I am still trying to write it. I know in your head right now you're thinking, when are you going to send me something I could post on the website?
So that would be nice, but I know that writing, I'm still working on my fire department book, and this is the 12th year.
Yeah. So with me, it's, truth be told, I think only I'm entering year 2, truly, in terms of writing it. But I have outlined 25 chapters, and I've got 10,000 words written. I look up some word counts for some other books. I'm like, wow, I'm only 1/10 the way done. This is not looking good. But it's something like, at one point, I'm like, I want to be published by the time I'm 40. Well, 40's happening this year. Now I'm like, well, now I want to make sure I have the book done and am revising it among friends by the time this time next year rolls around, because I'm relating it to the Black Sox scandal in 1919, and they were not suspended until 1921. So as long as I'm still fitting in that 100th anniversary window, I think I'm okay. Dreams evolve, and it's like, as parents, as dads, what do we do to make sure our children are able to pursue their dreams, whatever they may be? And, no. And some our kids might just be too young to even know what those dreams are right now.
Well, I have high schoolers, so they got to start formulating dreams. Now, when I was a little kid, I wanted to be a fireman or ambulance EMT, mm-hmm. because my favorite television show was Emergency. I wanted to be Roy or Johnny. And I kind of got to live that a little bit when I was doing research for my fire department book. I rode along in the ambulance for three shifts. Well, it was mostly the ambulance. I did ride in the fire truck one time to a fire, which, you know, I'm not allowed out of the truck at that point.
Right.
But I did get to go on it. I got to go on the ambulance and saw some of the things from the other side, things I'm not supposed to talk about. But there's definitely a different side of humanity when you're riding in the back of an ambulance.
Oh, yeah.
And I realized that it takes a special person to be an EMT and to be a fireman. And while I'm special, I am not that special. I am definitely not that special. So that one, I kind of knew that it really wasn't for me anyway. But the fact that I got to experience a little bit of it proved it. And then I wanted to be an astronaut. And then what happened in 1986? The space shuttle blows up.
Right.
And so that kind of went out the window.
That's one of the few things I remember from kindergarten, was everybody bringing the TVs into the classroom and like, oh my God, what happened? And then you realize it doesn't hit home until years later. Like, right. Oh my God, that's what happened.
I was big into the space program, so it was a huge blow for me. And then I decided that, you know what, I wanted to be a writer. I still want to be a writer. I don't think I've considered myself a writer yet, but I'm still working on it. And even at 46, I still have dreams. Like, my dream right now is to have my own television show, whether it be sitcom-y Letterkenny type of thing, or whether it be hosting some kind of history or something like a talk show.
A talk show where the three of us, you know, when Bobby is, you know, feeling better, the three of us could go on the air and be like, hey, well, let's talk, you know, dadding, you know, just stuff like that.
And if you would have said 20 years ago that I would be interested in doing this, what we're doing right now, or being on the radio or being on television, I would have said, no way. That's not me. I'm too shy. I don't like to talk. And I've gotten over that. I was really quiet in high school and stuff. And people that I see from my class now go, holy cow, you talk a lot now. Like, I didn't know you even said words before. And I'm way over the shyness now.
I think, to my own detriment, talked a lot in high school. Might explain some things. I don't know.
I look at it this way. I wanted to be a writer. Yeah. That was like my longest dream. And my favorite history writer is David McCullough. He did not write his first book until he had it published just after he turned 46. I just turned 46 and my book's about done. So I'm on the same pace as David McCullough.
Well, there you go.
So that's a goal.
I mean, there's always things you look at and you think to yourself, oh man, I'm behind schedule. And then you see when certain people like McCullough or I don't know. I can't think of any off the top of my head, but I'm sure you've seen the memes and I've seen the memes. I just can't think of the names where these people who have become, to varying degrees, respected all the way up to legends in their own fields, started like 8, 10, and 20 years later than we're starting right now. I take solace in the fact that if you look back like 20, however many years you need to look back, 20, 25 years ago, and then do another jump to about 40 years before that, and look at the way our parents looked when they were our age, versus how we look now.
We definitely have a different perspective on how we look, because I always think we look younger, that I look younger than my dad did at the same age. But realistically, when you look at it unbiasedly, we look exactly the same age.
See, I, even with the bias thrown in, I think I look younger, and I think my wife looks younger than, you know, she looks younger than her parents did 20 years ago. I look younger than my parents did 20 years ago, as of right now. And if you look at the pictures of our grandparents when they were 40. It's one of those things where you look and you go, oh my God, you know, I don't know if it's everybody realizing, you know, nowadays you need to take better care of yourself and so on and so forth, and all the advantages that are available to us today that weren't available 40
and
some odd years
honestly,
ago.
Honestly, fashion over the last 40 years has changed drastically. We're not dressing up as formally as we used to, and I think when you dress like that, you appear to be a little bit older.
Maybe to an extent.
Like, you look at my grandfather. My grandfather died at 51, and so he died when I was 8 years old. But I remember him from age 5, 6, 7, 8. So we're talking 47. I look at the pictures, and my grandfather looks a lot older. He's got the polyester pants on. This is the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got the button-up white shirt or the cream-colored shirt. People don't wear clothes like that. If I were to dress in those clothes, I would appear to be older than I am.
Looks are always deceiving. I think that's the bottom line. And I apologize. I'm realizing now I got us a bit off topic.
Way off topic. Yeah.
I'm sorry. But it was because of you. Because you're bringing up when McCullough got, you know, his big break. You know, so age is nothing but a number. They say life begins at 40. Maybe life begins at 50. Life expectancy is longer now than it was then.
Not by much.
Well, it's,
a lot of... I'm going to get into history here for a moment. I hear people who say, oh, you only live to be 30 because the life expectancy in the 1600s or 1700s is only till 30. Now, people still live to 70 and 80. It's just that infant mortality was so high, it dragged that number down. You didn't get married at 12 and 13.
No.
It didn't happen. You're still getting married at 17, 18, 19, 20. It's just that so many babies died, it drags the number down. So when I hear people talk about that, I just, no, it's that's not what happened.
Well, what's also helped the number go up is, you know, vaccines. But that's a story for another day.
Well, we just lost our Jenny McCarthy.
Oh, we did? Oh, yeah. What a shame. No, but I mean, you've got two high schoolers. I've got one who's technically in high school. And I don't know what the dreams are that they hold. Or mine's kind of said he wants to be an architect of some sort. And he loves to build and draw. And
I thought he might want to be a dictator.
Well, I think so, too.
Because he's got that game.
Oh, I know, that war domination, world conquest game. But
it's risk times 1,000.
Yeah. Yeah. Imagine risk, but now imagine risk with county lines. That's what it is. But he's really into that. And my son is very detail-oriented, worries about a lot of things that I've tried to get him not to worry about. At one point, he was discussing his class presidency, and he's like, my class is trying to impeach me. I'm like, I don't know if half of your class even knows what the word impeach means, and I'm not saying that to be derogatory. I'm saying it because that's a matter-of-fact type of thing. And he's concerned about, you know, how it's going, and he's having fun doing what he's doing, and he's like, if I do this, I can do this. So he's thinking ahead to a certain extent, but sometimes he's thinking so far ahead to the detriment of the present. And he's like skipping steps. And I've tried telling this to my daughter too. And just in terms of doing math work, it's like, you want to do this? You can't skip steps. Because if I'm checking your work, I don't know how you got from A to Z. Show me B through Y. And I don't know what her dream is.
That always drove me crazy in school. Because why do I show you all the work when the answer is very obviously by looking at it 20?
Well, no. That, you know, if it's 5 times 4, fine. Show me what 5 times 4 is. But if it's like a multiplication thing with fractions and you have to change the denominators and everything else, I'm like, show me how you got to this and this. So I know if you got the answer wrong, I can point out where you made the mistake. But I don't know what she wants to be. My 5-year-old's very simple. She's telling me what she wants to have when she grows up, not what she wants to do when she grows up. But I guess the big question I have is, you know, we could come back full circle and just say, you know, at what point is it too much of a push? Is it more pushing or is it more supporting a parent saying, all right, we're going to help you do this because this is something you're interested in? Like, you look at the baseball parents or the hockey parents, right? Or the football parents. Do you take the 4 major sports, right? Look at the parents of those young kids who are playing those 4 major sports. At what point does being the supportive parent become the pushy parent? Like, well, my kid is better than your kid, and I'm going to make sure that I go on all these travel. Is that the kid's dream, or is that your dream?
I have to think that maybe I'm the bad parent when it comes to that, because I have kids who are into sports, and I'm like, all right, great, she scored, or she's playing this, that's cool, she's starting today. Like, if she makes a bad play, I'm like, oh, well, she'll learn from it. And meanwhile, if another kid has a bad play, the parents are going nuts on the sideline, and they're like, how can you not be... They're just kids learning to love the game.
Yes. And I think that since I'm having an issue, and based on your lack of response, I'm going to assume you're kind of having a bit of an issue too, trying to relate the air story to just a more general thing. We'll stick it to sports, but make sure that it understands to, you know, the whole general broad concept here is dreams are one thing, but you got to be careful to nurture them, not oversaturate them. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I know people who... their kids, they'll be into a sport. So I'm going to go with softball because it's going to be easy. So we have a friend, possibly, this is a hypothetical story. I want to make that clear right now.
Okay.
Who will have a child who's really good at playing softball. So they'll have their child play for every travel team. They'll spend thousands of dollars every year for 8 years so they can get a college scholarship because we can't afford college. Well, you can't afford college now because you spent $5,000 a year for 8 years.
Yes. I mean, that's crossing the line into overkill.
Right. Now, if the kid loves it and wants to go out for it, that's an entirely different story.
Yes.
Like, we have the same thing in our house where if you want to do that, then we're going to support you. But if we're going to make a fiscal commitment to it, you have to maintain for a specific amount of time. I'll give you an example. Idalina loves music. So she wanted to get a new trombone. So we went and bought her a professional grade trombone because her dream right now is to do either music therapy or become a music teacher. And trombone is her instrument. So we spent almost $2,000 on an instrument, which doesn't seem like a lot when you look at some of the costs of instruments.
I don't care who you are. When you're a family of six, $2,000 is a lot.
It is.
Yeah.
So you're going to play the trombone through the rest of high school. That's if we're spending this while you're in ninth grade, then this is going to last you 10th, 11th, and 12th. And since this is a professional model, it'll last you all 4 years of college.
Yes.
So that the commitment is you're finishing playing music through high school. If you get to graduate and decide that something else you don't want to do, we've gotten 3.5 years out of it. I'm fine with that because you may still pick it up and play it at your leisure.
Yes.
So that's not a problem. That I have no issue with, you know, we're not saying that you have to go on and do everything, but you have to maintain what you're doing in school.
Right.
So same thing with Patience. She plays saxophone, and then she wanted to move on to the Barry sax. Well, we're not going to spend the thousands of dollars on a Barry sax. So we rented one from the school. It's like $75 for the year.
That's fine.
You can't beat it.
No.
But you're going to have to finish the year out.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not forcing her to do 4 years
no.
on a $75 thing. But if I'm spending the $75, which is not a lot again, it's probably a month's worth of milk in our house, then, you know, you're going to finish the year. There's a commitment that if you're going to start something, you have to follow through to the end of that session.
I think the two words that best sum up what you said is don't quit.
Right. And don't quit just because it gets hard. Because
oh, yeah.
when it gets hard and you have failures, you learn the best from those.
Oh, yeah. It's like, I saw something the other day. The people who have become experts in their field have failed more often than people who have not even tried to do what they have done in their field.
Right.
And, you know, that goes back to the Edison quote, I have not failed 10,000 times. I've only found 9,999 ways to make it not work.
Right.
But no, I completely agree with everything you were saying. It's like, Alex is like, I want to play the, my son Alex, when he decided to join band, they said he was best suited for the trumpet. So he's playing trumpet. At one point, he was just giving my wife and I a hard time about wanting to join marching band last year.
I would have loved to seen him with a tuba.
My brother played the tuba.
In marching band, playing the tuba.
Yeah, that would have...
I think it would have worked because he's not a small kid. He's pretty solid.
Yeah.
He could handle it.
I think he could, but I don't know if I wanted to...
Boom. Boom.
No,
boom,
no, not even boom. That. It's it, what would have annoyed me with him playing the tuba or the sousaphone or whatever large horned instrument it would have been him coming back after a long day of marching band practice this past fall, telling me how tired and exhausted and painful he is because he was holding it on this shoulder and it was doing this. And it was, I'm like, look, just trumpet's fine. You know, the less right. he's got to carry, the better, because this is somebody who'll be like, I can't open the door. I'm like, put your backpack on and your coat on and you got two free hands. Sometimes he makes things more difficult than it needs to be.
So what is his dream? To be an architect, you said?
Yeah, he wants to be an architect. I mean,
is really cool.
Right. We've bought him. I mean, he builds all these different models. He's got models like Lego models, foam models, 3D models all around his room. He's got, you know, the Lego architecture series that you might find at
yes.
Target?
Right? Yep.
He's got every one of them. Every last one of them. He's got New York City, Shanghai, and Paris skylines, among others. He's got...
That's so cool.
He's got the Statue of Liberty that's about almost 3 feet tall. He's got the Capitol building. He's got the White House. He's got all these things. He loves them.
His future home.
The White House?
Yes.
Don't put it past him. He understands it more than I do, and I don't say that lightly. But at the same time, he starts explaining it to me. I'm like, Alex, please, you know, look. If you want to give me your opinion on what's going on in the country, that's fine. Make sure it's your opinion and not one that you just saw on television from the same three people you've been watching. You know, listen to the news, not news opinion. There's a difference. I'm still trying to teach him that. No, back to the whole don't quit thing. You know, he wanted to join marching band. So a very, very, you know, small-fledged dream would be he wants to join the marching band. Okay, great. So he joins it last spring. He could have done marching band the fall of 2018. But I told him to make sure that he was okay doing different things first before he joined into that because I didn't want him getting overwhelmed. So he joined just typical marching band, like street marching band, last spring. And that worked out well. And he didn't really miss too much because his bar mitzvah was last fall.
So he had a pretty big commitment.
Right. And I didn't want one overtaking the other. So when he joined marching band last fall, full-fledged, he was all into it. And he, you know, he was so involved to the point where it got upsetting to me. He's like, I got to be at band practice on time. I'm like, okay, when's band practice? Well, we'll say 9:30 in the morning, right? I'm like, okay, at about 9:15, I'll be ready to go. He's like, no, we got to be there at 9:15. I'm like, what? He's like, Alex, it's a 2-minute drive to the high school. You're still going
to
be 15.
You live really close.
I'm like, you're 15 minutes early. He goes, I got to be there half an hour early. I'm like, why? And he's like, because half an hour is early, 15 minutes is on time. I'm like, Alex.
I agree with him.
To a point, I agree with him as well. But at the same time, it got a little tedious listening to him say, well, I'm going to be late. And if he shows up at 10 after 9, he's one of the first people there, and he's telling me he's late. I'm like, no, you're not late. You got to give yourself a little bit of a leeway here. And he was so early so often that I think the two times I got him there exactly on the button on time or only 10 minutes early when there were other people showing up, he was upset with me afterwards. I go, Alex, you have accrued so much equity with how early you've been the whole time that I am positive, no matter who your boss is or your instructor is or whatever, if you continue maintaining that level of responsibility, they'll let one or two times over the course of time slide because you've proven that it's not the norm. So I'm trying to teach them not to, you know, if you're going to have these dreams and have these goals, you've also got to relax as you work towards them, because if you're too uptight, you're not going to enjoy the ride. And I think that's one of the things that sometimes the sporting parents forget as well. It's like, well, I got to have this kid here and this kid here. This one's playing soccer. This one's playing football. This one's playing basketball. It's like, take a breath. Remember, they're just kids.
It always astounds me looking at my kids. I mean, my wife knew exactly what she wanted to be from a fairly early age. Until I was 40, I didn't have a clue. I had zero inkling of what I wanted to do, really. I mean, serious thoughts of what I wanted to do when I was in high school. Because I, unfortunately, was like, I wanted to party, hang out with friends,
I mean,
read.
Right. I mean, I went to college to be a broadcast journalist. I know plenty of people who have made names for themselves in the business. I actually co-hosted shows with some of them when I was in college. Here I am now sitting across the table from you, and I'm not where they are. But at the same time, I adjusted the way my priorities were. I'm like, other things just wound up being more important.
I look at my kids and, like, you know, Idalina definitely wants to do something in music. And we weren't sure what she wanted to do for a while. She flipped back and forth, but music has now been, I think this is the third year she's consistently said music. So it seems like she's kind of latched onto that, and that's wonderful. The only thing that I get on their case is they don't practice enough, but I have to remember that she's taken like 3 band classes plus her normal lessons. Right. So, I mean, she plays a lot during the day, and Patience does also. It's the other two who are also playing, because we have 4 musicians in the house who don't practice enough, and they need to practice more. But now Patience, she wants to be an early education teacher. And she wants to go to a local college so she can still live at home. But in order to have money, she wants to go to BOCES during high school to learn how to cut hair and do cosmetology stuff so she can pay her way through college. And I'm like, that's a heck of a plan.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And then Corlys, her dream is to perform on Broadway.
And she's been involved in as many musicals as possibly get her, you know, her name into.
Yep.
Right?
She sure has.
And JoJo, she's still too young to actually have what a firmed up dream would be anyway, right?
So we haven't figured out. Right now, her dream is to play Minecraft when I get home.
I remember those days where my dream was to come home and go out in the yard and play softball or Foursquare, or just if it was cold, I'd be like, all right, my friend's coming over. We're going to play with the Transformers and the G.I. Joes, you know? It was just like, or Nintendo, you know, one way or the other. I wasn't thinking of the future further than that afternoon. But I think the one thing you and I seem to have said in common without actually saying is that as parents, our jobs are to make sure that our kids, if they are interested in something, we give them the tools to succeed in that thing, and we give them enough of a push to make sure they don't quit it at the first sign of hardship.
Right. And the other thing is, too, that we can't wish our dreams upon them.
No. And I think a lot of times that's where you see the burnout from a lot of other younger kids. I remember this story, and it does relate to this. It's not a tangent, I promise. When I was in high school, I remember the baseball star of the high school. His grades were not the greatest. And one of the assistant coaches, who I knew outside of school because his family and my family were very good friends, relayed this story a year or two later about how the star was taking batting practice at the indoor batting cage at the high school one day, and the assistant coach told said star's father, says, hey, listen, he's got to work on his grades because they're not the greatest, and it's going to be difficult for him to see. They got to get better. And the father said, no, that's okay. If his grades aren't the best, it's all right. He'll still get a scholarship going to play baseball somewhere. And it says, yeah, but you do realize you got to maintain those grades in college too, right? No, no, no. Baseball's going to take him far. And at that point, the assistant coach in front of said star's father said, congratulations, you're going to be the greatest softball player this city's ever seen. As in, like, you're going with a bomb out in college, come back and play city league softball. A couple years later, I was down visiting my mom, and sure enough, I saw this guy's name in the city beer league softball reports. He had all the talent in the world, but he didn't know what to do to back it up. So that's where, as a parent, you got to put your foot down and say, listen, if you want to do this, you need to make sure all your ducks are in a row and make sure that everything, you need to make sure you have something to fall back on. Because for everybody who has this dream, or for every kid who has a particular dream, there's thousands of others who have the same dream. You know, in sports, it's magnified because there's only a couple thousand professional athletes at the highest level in America at any given point. But Broadway's the same way. Traveling shows the same way. There are jobs out there that people will want to do. And in order to do them, you actually have to work towards them. You can't just say, oh, this is hard. Quoting a famous fictional sports character in a movie, the hard is what makes it great. If you get through the hard part, then the reward is that much greater. I think I made my point there. I think you understood what I was going with. It wasn't too much of a tangent. It was still on topic.
It was.
Because you like making fun of me for going on too many tangents, and that one was not that great of a one.
So going back to you when you were a kid, you wanted to be a doctor, you wanted to be a lawyer, and you ended up being a writer, and you liked writing. Was there something else in between there or anything?
I wanted to be on ESPN.
So you're still kind of in the broadcast, the journalism thing.
Yeah, it was under the same journalism umbrella. I wanted to be the guy saying, remember when ESPN had their show Dream Job, where people were training out for SportsCenter anchors?
Yeah.
It was like American Idol on ESPN, but for being a SportsCenter anchor. I thought to myself, man, I could do that. And there were several people I know who tried out. One of them wound up not advancing. He advanced pretty far, then wound up in a different job and worked his way back up. That's one of the guys who's on there now. It was one of those things where I thought to myself, I could do it. I could do it. And I realized, yeah, I could, or I would like to think that I could. But where I was in my life at that point, it would have been such a hardship for everybody else who I was helping or with or whatever. It wouldn't have worked. A lot of life is timing.
Right.
And I think that's what so many people years later don't even realize. It's like, if the timing isn't right, then, you know, you miss your chance.
So off that just a little bit, I'm going to have my own tangent here.
Go for it. It's not like you haven't earned it.
So thinking about the things that you wanted to do and to think about when you were growing up, if you can make a change, and I don't like talking about making changes to your life because, as far as I'm concerned, to be the person I am today, it took everything that I've already done. So to change it changes who I am today.
This is like one of those if we knew then what we know now type of things?
Right.
Okay.
What would you have done differently to get to something you wanted to do?
You're asking me specifically?
Yeah.
All right. I'll throw this out there. And this is one of those gigantic, and when I say gigantic, I mean Ilya Bryzgalov, monstrous, big, huge, universe-shaking type things, right? Right around the time I was graduating college, I had only been dating my now wife for less than a year. I didn't know what was going to come of it, but I knew that there was something I wanted to come of it. You know what I mean? It was spring semester, and I had thrown my resume in to be part of, I think it was an NBC page program. And it was through a Newhouse job fair and whatever, and I was one of four applicants they chose for an interview. But I was so dead set on being on air rather than behind the camera that they said, more or less, thanks, but no thanks.
You said that?
No, they said that.
Okay.
But they were interested in what I had to offer. So a whole lot of ifs and buts here. If I was not seeing somebody at the time, might I have said, you know what, I'm willing to work my way up from behind the camera to in front of it. And I could have, you know, lived down in the New York City area for a year or so and done X, Y, and Z.
Gone to a couple of Ranger games.
I would have gone to a lot of Ranger games. Who are you kidding? But it would have been one of those things where I was like, okay, you know, I can do this. Hey, this is fun. I'm going to make a career out of it. How would my life be different? Well, pretty sure I wouldn't be sitting here. I'm also pretty sure that I wouldn't have three kids. I wouldn't be able to give sage dad advice, you know, or anything like that. So it's one of those things where you look back and go,
would it be better or would it be worse?
Honestly, with the way the world is right now, if I had gone down that road, my life would be worse.
Okay.
So I have no regrets.
I have no regrets either. The only thing that I wish I had done differently, two things. I was so quiet and withdrawn and shy throughout my entire school career and into my 20s and stuff. I wish I was a little more assertive and not so afraid to talk to people, that I was more like I am now. Looking at my 40-something year self, that's probably the biggest thing that I wish I could change, is that I wasn't so shy. Because I was very, very shy in school and beyond that.
Well, that's more of a personality trait, though. You're asking me something else. That's not fair. Come on.
The second thing was more along the same lines. Now that I love this media stuff, I wish that I had done more with media. But it went back to, I was so shy, there's no way you're going to put me on a microphone or you're going to put me in front of a camera or anything. And I think that that was a detriment to me doing this earlier. I think that once I found doing this was so much fun, starting with the hockey games, like, I wish I had done this for years.
Oh, yeah. When you find something you like, it's like a high. I'm saying that in the kindest sense of the word, you know? It's like, you do a good job and you know you've done a good job and someone's going to say, hey, attaboy or attagirl or whatever. It's like, hey, I'm going to do that again. That felt good. It's like walking around handing something out to somebody or giving a larger tip than you might have, you know, otherwise given. It's one of those things, you feel good about it. And when you do something where you feel good about yourself, no one else needs to say anything to you, but you're like, hey, that felt good.
We had that again. With the Express games. We'd finish a game and I would turn to you and go, that was so much fun, or that was awesome. We had a good broadcast tonight.
Yeah. I mean, there were games we also turned to each other like, well, that sucked. But I mean, but more often than not, we're like, that was fun. You know, George, may he rest in peace, was like, I can't stand, you know, listening to Doc. I'm like, Doc Emmerich on NBC put it best. He goes, I've never gone to work a day in my life. You know, when you find something you enjoy, it's not work. It's
fun. I'm not a big fan of Doc, but I'll take Doc over Pierre Maguire any day.
Well, this is also true. So,
which is way off tangent.
Yeah, let's not tag him in this.
No.
Although he might.
Though NBC has an opening now because Roenick's out. So, dear NBC, my name is Craig Bacon, and he is Howard Balaban. Together, we will cost less than Jeremy Roenick, and we will be a heck of a lot more fun.
Yeah, just put us on the pension plan. We're all good. You know, yeah. That's great. Well, we'll even take the $500 a game that Ayers got, you know?
Right.
You know, just give us, you know, 80 games a year. That's good. Over the course of the season.
Right.
You know? We should be fine.
We'll just do the Saturday afternoon games.
That's fine, too. That's money we didn't have before.
Right. So, dear NBC, we are interested, and we are cheaper than Jeremy Roenick. And funnier.
Yes. And definitely, unless it's on paid NBC, definitely much safer for work.
Yeah, just don't listen to Shenanigans.
Yeah, Shenanigans, something different.
Right.
You know, if you're going to dig up our past, you know, yeah.
That's
yeah,
a different Craig and a different Howie.
Yeah, that's Schmeg Schmaken and Schmauer Balaban. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Right. All right, so, you know, for the dads, there's only two of us here today, and we hope that Bobby feels better, and we'll be back here next week. For Howie and Craig, thanks for listening to Dads Must Be Crazy, and join us again next week. The Dads Must Be Crazy would like to thank Scott Leffler for putting together our awesome intro to the show. And thank you to Amanda Hodge, who helps us with our designs and logos. Intro and outro music provided by Incomtech.com. Our theme music is Retro Future Clean by Kevin McLeod, licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license.